Hello and welcome back to Breach Print. We got a hot release today. G4 just dropped. Got Scott, Zach, and Brian here to discuss the new packet. Theme things that you noticed that changed.
I did want to point out that when they dropped the Big Hat thing, there was lots of arguing and discussing about the upgrades for the new Big Hat release that they had. And as a lot of people predicted, they did bring it up in the GG4. So basically, anytime a model summoned, if it doesn't get a summon upgrade, gets a summon token. So that will clears up the Big Hat's kerfuffle everyone was talking about. But that's the one, kind of the one that came out to me. I don't know if anyone else noticed anything also that kind of stuck out.
It's kind of funny because for whatever reason, that's just how I always assumed it worked. But I guess they needed to clarify that that's the function or change it or whatever.
Yeah, because I guess in the rules it said if it got an upgrade, it didn't get a token and they didn't say summon upgrade. So when the new Big Hat stuff came out, it got an upgrade. So it shouldn't get a token, even though it was a summon. So a lot of people were reading it that way. So now that's taken care of.
I see.
Anyone else notice anything? No?
I think someone had mentioned that they just kind of detailed more about some of the terrain and stuff in the GG packet. A little more descriptive about how much of what type should be used.
Yeah, there's a section for...
I haven't looked it fully over myself, but it seemed a little bit bigger.
Yeah, in the adjusted rules section, it talks about unreachable areas, which I don't think was there before. Markers there. So it's a pretty minor case, but I guess if you put it inside of a house or something, then...
Yeah, I kind of have to admit that I kind of just jumped to page 11 of the document and skipped all the other stuff. But when I was scrolling through it, I did notice it looks like they kind of expanded on some of the alternate formats for games, beyond Henchman Hardcore and stuff like that. And it also looks like they added some more, different versions of, bands and stuff like that. So,
did they?
And a little note that just says, if you don't like it and you want to create your own for your own tournaments, it's your thing. Do what you want to do.
But I'll look into it more in depth here, but most people, I started squeeing and then instantly went to the new strategies and schemes.
We've been thirsty, starving, famished.
Yes,
very and ready. Thirsty.
But on that note, why don't we jump into it? So we kind of go over, we'll do a quick review of the strategies and we'll kind of go around the horn. I'll start us off. First one I'll start off with is the plant explosives. So those of you who aren't brand new to the game will recognize this as an oldie but goodie. After you deploy your models, so those models who are from the shadows cannot get plant explosive tokens. So kind of reversal of way people got around with Curse. I'm looking at you, Bayou, and Bob players. You wouldn't get the Curse tokens. Well, now you won't get the plant explosive tokens. So I'll let you decide if that's a good thing or a bad. So minions can get one. Anyone who's not a minion can have two. And then throughout the game, you can go beyond that limitation. So basically, you want to drop these on the opponent's side of the board.
That's a change, though, isn't it? Previously, couldn't minions only have one, period?
Minions can have one. Non-minions can have two.
Yeah, but I mean... previously, you could only have one at any time, but in this is saying during deployment. So can minions get an extra one during the actual game?
Yes. It calls it out that those limits are just for when deploying. After that, you can surpass the limits during the game.
Okay, so that is a change.
Yep. So basically, you just interact, drop them on your opponent's side of the board. And when you do drop them, it's basically a 30 mil marker. And you can't have any other ones within
6 inches.
6 inches, yes. And your opponent can pick them up. And if they do pick them up, then that model gets a token. You can, if a model is killed, the tokens it has go to the opposing crew within 3 inches. And if there's no one within 3 inches of you, then they're just gone from the game. And the way you score is you need to have one marker on there for every VP you're going to be scoring. So if you for the first one you need one, second one you need two, so on and so forth. And they have to be wholly on the opponent's side of the board. Any markers on the center line count for being on both sides of the board. So if you can only get it to halfway point, then you can be also helping out your opponents. But so yeah, simple. You know, once you get these in and drop them and defend them. So yeah, so again, you want to have interacting and stuff like that. I think this will also be a trend in a lot of the new strategies and stuff like that. There are no exceptions or exemptions for being engaged when you do things, other than if you are targeting the model you're doing it to. So, as many people have noted earlier, Don't Mind Me just got a whole lot better. And I think that's going to be a running theme throughout this. So, who would like to take the next one?
I can grab the next one. Raid the vault. So looking over this one is basically guard the stash, but they have adjusted it so that the markers on your opponent's half are worth 2 points instead, which is fantastic. You can effectively grab the two back ones, and if you can hold those, that's basically all your points, right? Same setup on markers. It's just I don't recall if the actual strategy markers were height five blocking and passable previously, but this is really just bringing back that whole concept, but with even more incentive to move across the board.
Yeah, it's interesting how before how the deployments are going to change it. So in third with guard, a lot of people liked corner and flank because it spread out the ones on the center line. And so now I think maybe going forward, people are going to like standard and wedge because it gives you more markers that will count for 2 points as opposed to the diagonal one. So that'll be interesting to see how people are will view that.
Yeah, and that was always one of my favorite aspects of the strategy was just how the deployments affected the actual play of the strategy. Like the locations of them were entirely different.
And the other thing is, yes, this is kind of a redone guard the stash, but with the new schemes that are involved, it also just completely changes things up. So just the strat itself has more incentive to be on the other side, and as we get into those schemes, we'll really see that sometimes you need scheme markers just everywhere, you need models all over the place, and it's going to change up the, hey, we just go fight in the middle for the center ones.
Yep, an important. I guess I can take Cloak and Dagger, although I'll admit it still confuses me. So, controlled markers within an inch can take an interact to gain an intel. After doing so, the opposing player may place that strategy marker within 4 inches. And then, friendly controlled models within an inch in line of sight of an enemy model with an intel may take an interact insignificant on the table. Get one VP if you have more intel this turn than was scored VP for this strategy. So yeah, I kind of ended up reading through. You're essentially dropping these bricks in the center of the board. You interact to the marker, the tokens. The enemy gets token to themselves. But obviously, models that can walk in. Yeah, it's a pretty interesting one.
It's probably the most complicated one that we have here.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's one of those cases where like I'm wondering how this one will end up playing out. Like in diagonal deployments, I can see, you're gonna probably put them as far back on the center line closest to your edge as you can, right? So like where you're gonna like run over there, start interacting with them, and like the markers are gonna probably start moving towards the center more. So eventually everything's just going to kind of clash into the center into a big old fight. So it's like, will people, sit back and play it safe and, just push them and, take however long it takes for the models to actually get close enough to start engaging? Or is it going to be a case where you're going to try and launch somebody into your opponent to try and disrupt them and get some interacts back on their markers? I'll be really curious to see how this one how people decide they want to try and play this and what they think be most optimal for it.
I think terrain will also help with that a lot. If there is severe terrain on like one side and, you know, your opponent forgets to take models that can deal with that, you know, you make sure that one of them you drop is right over there, because you got like a flying move 7 watcher that can just get over there, and then you don't touch that one until you have to, because you remove all intel tokens off, so you don't want to just, and actually you can load them up, you can go grab a watcher, grab it, then run that model away to use as necessary if need be, because you say remove all, or that one can stack a couple. You can grab it and wait to score off of that watcher. Now that it has 2 intel tokens, and like second turn you need 2, that one has 2, you can use it. There's a lot of tactical play with when you use it, what models you use, which ones are you grabbing. So I think mobility will be the key to that strat, just being able to go where you need to go.
Yeah, I think this is gonna be one of those ones where how good you play footsies and how good you enable your dive in on something, like setting up and establishing the best moment to strike is going to be really important here.
Yeah, I think also too, the game on which way, so when your opponent interacts with the marker, which way are you going to want to move it? Are you going to want to move it towards your deployment zone? Or are you going to, especially if you're going to be doing another a lot of schemes on the opponent's side of the board, move it in towards their deployment zone, so you're kind of maybe taking it with you, even though they just interact with it, to go where you are going to be. So I think that's going to be key on which way you move that, on what strategies and scheme or what schemes you've taken. And I think that could also help be, for those who are really paying attention, could be a giveaway on what schemes you've taken by how you're moving those markers. Also, Ride With Me and Fly With Me are going to be huge on this one, where you interact with it, they move it, you fly or ride with me, and then you interact with it again, so you get 2 in one AP. So also the whole take back these things. If someone takes an intel token off of them, you can't take it right back. So that's interesting on how they did that. So it's I think this is, for me, is the most interesting strategy.
I think spreading out your tokens might be a pretty viable strategy here, just to avoid what Brian mentioned, where, you know, if you load something up too much on one model, it could get dove in on something and get all of them yoinked.
Yeah, it also kind of incentivizes crews like Lucius, where you can go steal a bunch of intel markers of enemy models and can't steal them back that way.
So they can only hopefully kill you.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
this is going to be one of those cases where I'm actually really looking forward to playing like Ivan. Like Jin in particular, I think will be just hilarious for stuff like this. Like just teleporting him back over to the other side, like sending somebody back home and then just yoinking somebody's markers near the end of a turn.
So am I blind, or does it not say what happens when a model dies to their tokens? So I'm assuming, since it doesn't say, that the tokens are just gone.
Well, I mean, they have to be on a model to be removed from that model.
Yeah, no, all I'm saying is, like, if, let's say I have a young Nephilim and he has 2 tokens on it, he has 2 intel tokens on him, and he dies. It doesn't say, so I'm assuming those intel tokens just go away.
I mean, if it doesn't give you a means of transferring them, I think, yeah, they just go away.
Right. Zach, I think you got the last one here, stuff in the ballots.
I can stuff the ballots, or Brian can.
I have no problem, Scott, taking the last one.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Old man brain. I couldn't remember who had
as the other actual, like, you know, guild player, the one mainly has been doing it for a while, and this being, like, Nelly's jam.
Oh, yeah.
Or Asami, just ahead of time, low-cost minions that can get multiple AP to interact for stuff the ballots. You're going to get basically spread out all over the board all your ballot boxes, your strategy mark. There's one in the center. They're on the edges of the board. So they're not all clumped up. But the big part about this is that every turn after the first, so you can't start stuffing these initially, which is sad. But every turn you can start taking the interact action to stuff the ballot. You put one of your tokens in there to say, yep, I own this. I want to vote for it. You have to have, at the end of it, control of more ballot boxes than you have victory points. You have control if you have more ballots than your opponent, and those ballots stay in there until there is six, I believe they said. Until there's a total of six. And at six, then they go poof, and they all get cast, and it restarts. So you can actually force your opponent to they can't get more than you if you've got three in it, but if they can get to the third, it resets, and they got to add another one. So once you get to three, you've at least locked it down so your opponent can't get it until they've interacted a couple times. It's kind of interesting. I mean, since it's going to take a lot of interacts, I already said multiple going wide models, things like Dark Bargain, anything that has a bonus action to interact. And don't mind me, because if you're standing over one of those ballot boxes and you got a 2-inch reach, you can't be engaged and interact unless you have the Don't Mind Me. So you kind of can lock one of those down since they're generally along the outside of the center point one. There's one in the center of each table quarter, and then two center on the center line, each touching a different table edge. And you can lock those ones down pretty easily with a 2-inch model.
I am so excited for my buddy who has Nelly, because he picked her up forever ago and just, like, never felt like she had a place. And now, like, they're all your interacts are belong to us auras is going to be so fantastic here. Because they don't even need to, like, have a 2-inch reach at that point. They just need to be in the general area. It's like, oh, yeah, try and vote. We got voter fraud up in here.
Yeah, and it's not like you can stop them by just killing them. You have to kill them, then still interact. You're not, like, getting rid of tokens off of them.
Yeah, Nelly is such an AP sink for people to just do the thing here.
If only newsies were significant.
But also, like, just being able to see Colette on the table again, like, this strategy alone could do it. Like, just Don't Mind Me was literally a blank effect for the longest time, and actually having it mean something again. Like, even though I don't really play crews that have it, it's just chef's kiss. Like, bravo.
I mean, I can't wait to turn to just use my low-cost Sonya models that can make themselves fast, to sit there and stuff each of my corners with three before they walk off to start doing actual things.
or your favorite Hoffman making everyone fast and doing things.
Oh, God. Hoffman, my watcher list for Hoffman, because they're also hard to kill, will come into play when you get to all the schemes. But my go wide Hoffman list instead of the Killy list is going to work out great. Triple watcher, baby.
It seems Hoffman like you're one. Suggesting Guild is like a fan of this.
It has some good. I mean, you got Lucius. I think Guild's got some play. They've had some play. I'm still a fan of my Thunders. I'll still always go back to my Thunders. Asami is going to be key. Yokai actually might be okay again, since their bonus action is to interact. So we'll see. But yes, Guild, I'll probably be maining Guild for a while because it's got a lot of... And I've been maining Guild now.
No, I'm pretty stoked about all four of these overall. Like, Plant Explosives is just a nice kind of, like, comfort pick coming back. I love
the fact that you can drop those first turn. They don't score yet, but you can get out there and just all mine are down and then try to go wreak havoc.
Yeah, I've always been a fan of the strategies where it doesn't feel like you have to posture all of turn one before you get to actually, like, play the game. So things like this is very much up my alley.
Also, too, don't forget they called it out when they posted it, the developers, how on this one you can obey someone or you can obey an enemy model to put a vote token on there for you. So it's been a while since an obey could do something like that. So an obey masters would be a good option in this one as well.
Don't leave your low-cost models or any models against Zoraida near the ballot box, because she'll turn it around on you.
Yeah, and actually that kind of makes it risky to have some of those models, those cheap models, run up and to just dump all their AP into voting.
Yep, that Zoraida and Thrall trigger to put the two vote tokens on there looks pretty spicy, as opposed to, you know, maybe a different option than you just enthrall the Peacekeeper and make him go punch some models 2 AP in a row.
You know,
doesn't
what helps
Castor
with that?
Have something like that too?
Riot Breakers. Just going to say Riot Breakers, going back to Guild.
Yeah, Castora has a bit of an obey, doesn't
yes,
he?
Yes, on his range attack that hands out staggered and stun, he does have an enthrall trigger on there, but it's still he's only handing out one AP, whereas Zoraida hands out two. So Zoraida,
sure,
the queen of obeys. And then, you know, coincidentally, you know, all those leapers that she can bring, you know, might be able to do a thing or two with these strategies as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so if we don't have anything else to touch on with the strategies, kind of go into the schemes here. So I guess we'll just keep going around the horn until we get through all 13 of these. So I'll start us off again. We got Let Them Bleed. So again, an oldie but goodie. I don't think anything's really changed on this one. It's basically the two highest cost models, not including Masters. And if they're tied, you know, you go for the two highest that are tied. If you have three models that are all the same, you know, you get to choose the two. But if you take those models down to half health or less, and then you get a VP. So, yeah, so leaders. So I guess so a second master would be a good counter to this because it's only leaders and models with summon upgrades are ignored. So that's a reveal. So two highest cost models have them at half health. And it's not the two highest cost that started the game. It's the two that are on the board at that time. So if you were to say if they did take a second master and you killed it, then it would go to the two highest that were, you know, still in the game. And then at the end of it, as long as there are no model, you only have one model at full health. Other than, and again, models with summon upgrades don't count for this in the endpoint. So, you know, just beat up the crew and knock everyone down. So, you know, nice, easy one to start off with, you know, all these other ones that we'll be doing a lot of interacting with. So.
Yeah, I think Let Them Bleed came in because they got rid of, like, the big three schemes that were always there. So, like, as a reminder for everyone, we don't have Assassinate Vendetta or Breakthrough anymore.
And Hidden Martyrs either.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so those four were kind of, especially Assassinate Vendetta and some version of Hidden Martyrs were always in there. Now they're gone and no Breakthrough. So It'll be interesting. But there to take the place of Breakthrough, they have plenty of Scheme Marker droppings.
Oh, God, yes. So Deathbeds is the second one. So that's also an oldie being brought back. But it seems like this one has been modified. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, guys. But so it says at the beginning of the game, secretly choose a type of non-Scheme Marker. I think previously you could choose a Scheme Marker for this. Because
you still need a Scheme Marker.
Yeah, I'm talking about the old version of it. I could have swore you just needed two of the chosen marker type and killed somebody by it, and now it's a scheme and that marker type. Am I wrong?
I think so. I think it was always you had to have a non-scheme marker and a scheme marker.
This is the one I don't know what the actual change is, so I never really took Deathbeds much.
I'm going to look it up.
So we'll come back to Deathbeds. James, do you want to take Power Ritual while we look this up?
Sure, Power Ritual. So class the reveal at the end of the turn. If you have a friendly scheme marker within 3 inches, you're not part of your deployment zone, you can point. Endpoint is you have to have three of those type of markers. So this is the one where you typically will either bluff it or take it and drop a scheme marker in your deployment zone, and then it's deployment zone to get your scheme markers down, spreading out.
It seems like the wording was just adjusted. I'm not seeing really a huge difference in it. Somebody can tell us exactly what the difference here is.
I was saying, someone can tell us the difference in your face, because I'm currently reading it on both of them, which is the next one, and I can't see a difference. So, spoiler, in your face is still here. It's still there. It's the killy one, but I'm not seeing any difference. So feel free to still go about killing 8 cost or more non-master models, non-leader models.
So the difference was that in a reveal before, it was the end of the turn if you had done to get the point. Now it's after you do the... So that was kind of an awkward interaction. So you would maybe kill a model, but if they were 3.5 inches off, you can't really measure that. So I know some people I knew were actually just revealed.
Thank you, James, because that's the change in your face, too. which it literally says revealed then and not at end of turn.
That's a good change. I ran into that more than once, what Jane was saying. You know, you're like, oh, was he really 3 inches? You know, especially not only if you killed it and it's obviously it's off the board, but then if you then move that master that you thought was it within 3 inches, you know, you could never verify. So yeah, that's a real good change. Did we find out the deathbeds quandary?
Yeah, we just went over that for deathbeds in your face. It's kind of the same thing. It's just revealed then instead of at the end.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think okay. The important thing about deathbeds in this packet is it's a theme that incentivizes main markers being down on the board.
It is. Oh, I see a difference. So in the new version of deathbeds, it specifies that you remove a scheme marker within two of the killed model. That wasn't specified previously. So I guess the difference there is that it doesn't have to be one of the original markers that... so it says you have to be within two of a scheme and one of the chosen types. I don't know why the wording changed on that. It seemed like it's pretty implied that you take one that's 2 inches, whatever. That's the difference that I see. It just notes the 2-inch range difference for removing a scheme after to score the point.
Yeah. Okay. So next one, deliver a message. Another oldie but goodie. So you secretly choose one of your non-leader models at the beginning of the game, and then you just have to, for the reveal, be within 1 inch of a enemy master or leader. And do an interact action, and the master or leader doesn't count for interacting to be as count as engaging you. But if there are other models around, they would count. Also, something to note here is it has to be during your activation, so you cannot be obeyed to do it. So you know maybe you can just walk twice, or you walk charge, but you don't have an active an AP to interact. You can't have Zerade or someone then obey you to deliver the message. Specifically calls out doing it during your activation. So that's something to keep an eye out for. And then for the endpoint, pretty easy. Just have to have an enemy master or leader within 2 inches in line of sight of one of your scheme markers. So don't kill their master or have two of them on the board or you don't get your endpoint. So again, another oldie but goodie. So another one that is interesting. I think that was the major change there is that it has to be done during your activations. Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
So next up is Outflank. Another classic one that seems it's asterisked for an adjustment. So this is at the end of the turn. If you have two or more models each within 3 inches of where the center line meets a different table edge or corner, and at least one of them is within 3 inches of a friendly scheme marker, you may choose one such scheme marker to... you may remove one such scheme marker to gain one VP. And then the end one is at the end of the game. If you have two models, each within three of where the center line meets a different table edge or corner, and within 3 inches of a friendly scheme marker, you may remove each such scheme markers to gain one VP.
Yep. So just a small change there. Before, you had to have two scheme markers for each part of it. Now you just need one for the reveal.
So making the first bit just a bit easier.
Yep. Yep.
I feel like this one's actually changed almost every time it's been repeated.
Yeah, it's gone through a couple of different iterations.
But more interacts, that seems to just be the theme of this GG. Everything requires an interact of some kind.
Just about so far. James, you want to do the next one?
Sure. So Hold Up Their Forces is a non-interact scheme engaging a different enemy model with higher cost than itself. You may, at the end of the game, if you have... two or more friendly models. Yeah.
Got I think we've had one. Stuff similar to this before.
Changed it. Yeah, I think yeah, this we've had this return. One before. It doesn't look like it's changed at all. So just, you know, all those four and three soulstone significant models you hire, they have to go stand over there and then die. And then hopefully you have enough models to do the end point.
Let's go Corrupted Hounds.
Yeah, Corrupted Hounds for the win, baby.
Espionage, number 8, is a new one. I'll just quickly read through it, but then we'll get into it. Which is a reveal at the end of the turn, you may remove 2 friendly scheme markers to gain a victory point. 1 of the removed scheme markers must be on the center line, and 1 must be in the enemy deployment zone. If this sounds familiar, a modified breakthrough. So, instead of having like 3 in the deployment zone, now 1 has to be on the center line and 1 in the deployment zone. So you have to either pre-plan this, or you need to not just have Desper go off and drop off, you know, 3 and run away with it, because he can't be in the deployment zone and on the center line at the same time. So I think it's a great change to Breakthrough, especially considering the endpoint. I know a lot when they in the Facebook post, they talked about being able to bluff. The endpoint says that you may remove 3 friendly scheme markers to gain the victory point. 1 has to be in your deployment zone, 1 on the center line, and 1 on the enemy deployment zone. So if you remember some of the older ones that we had early Mark 3, where you'd to drop 1 like in your own corner, this again can be a bluff where, you know, what am I doing first activation? I'm just going to drop a ski marker. Why not? It's in the pool. I'm just going to drop a ski marker. It's somewhere way back here. Maybe come get it.
Shtuk 2 loves this. Like, I'm already dropping a ski marker in the center of my crew anyways, like first turn to set up those abilities. But this is just one of those cases where I got a bluff built in. It's like, am I actually going to do it or not? I don't know, but I think he loves this entire pool. And anybody that can toss out scheme markers at range is just going to be eating good here. Yeah.
I mean, halfway through this, if you get power ritual, outflank, and espionage in the same pool, you can bluff the shit out of which of these or none of them that you're doing. So, so far so good on being able to bluff. And we're just a little over halfway through this. So,
say McCabe likes espionage as well, just because I like being around scheme markers and scrap markers. So You just do that huckster that drops a scheme and a scrap. You already got it there. There you go.
Yeah. Well, let's
more marker spam.
Yeah. So next one we have is sweating bullets. So beginning of the game, choose a non-leader model of one of yours. When you go to do the reveal, just the chosen model be within 6 inches of the center point and engaging an enemy master or henchman. And for the endpoints, if there are no unengaged enemy masters or henchmen within 6 inches of the center point, you score the seconds or the endpoint. So interesting how that works. So I think that one's definitely be something that you are going to want to look at what your enemy crew is going to be doing. If it's something like they're going to be wanting to take the center, like, you know, maybe a little bit more of a bubble master that's going to want to control that center of the board, that's something, you know, you definitely want to do. And this is good for, you know, any kind of like leaper or anything like that, for these kind of things like deliver the message and this very similar ones. But that endpoint is interesting on not having unengaged masters and henchmen in the center. So you either have to be engaging them or pull them out of the center, or, you know, just kill them. And they can't be unengaged if they're dead. So, so this is a new one. That's going to be interesting. I think that's going to definitely be more crew dependent on what your opponent has. So
this one seems a little tough to me, namely because you have to choose a specific model and then engage them to a specific type of model in a specific place. I tend to have difficulties with schemes of that nature, in particular just schemes that usually when you have to pick a model, that's something I tend to try and avoid. But then adding in those other caveats seems difficult, but I'm sure I'll try it at some point. So on the end point there, so at the end of the game, if there are no unengaged enemy masters or henchmen within 6 of the center point. So maybe I'm like misinterpreting this, but so if there are no unengaged, it makes it sound like there has to be an engaged master or henchman in near the center point in order for you to gain the point.
No.
Am I completely misreading that?
Because if there are no masters or henchmen within 6 inches, it doesn't matter if they're engaged or not. There's no one within 6 inches. So I would say, yeah, that's scoring it if they're not there or dead.
Fair enough. I guess I think there's a couple different ways you can get the points then.
Yep.
which is a boon to that to the scheme, in my opinion.
It sounds like a golden scheme boss to jump in. Within 6 inches of the center point is actually a decent.
So yeah.
I think the right model.
Oh yeah, this is like Krulgan sort of stuff.
And I'll say most of the strats still have strategy markers near within 6 inches of the center, 4 inches away or right on the center point. So it still do have a reason to take models to the map.
Sure.
Information overload because it excites me. It boils down to a pretty simple concept. For the more friendly scheme markers on the enemy table half, you can remove two of those to get a point. It's basically you're trying to hurt the opponent's scheme markers in number, and then you can remove two scheme markers to get a point. So for the first half, you have to have all. For the second part, you just need to have more. Shit out scheme markers like it's their business, and drop scheme markers or they're going to be giving up points. But since it's a generic action to drop a scheme marker, it's kind of an interesting mind game, I think.
I almost feel like with this, if you can drop three scheme markers on your table half first turn, it makes getting that first point really difficult early on. Because then they have to get at least four on your table half. So they have to get to the center line and start tossing them then. And otherwise, they have to run back and try and start removing yours from the back. So yeah, I think getting three on your bit will be kind of like the sweet spot there.
This is another one that will pair nicely with the other scheme dropping ones for bluffing purposes. You know, I'm dropping these in my deployment zone. Am I doing setting up for endpoint of overload? Am I doing power ritual? Am I, you know, doing these other ones, or am I just thinking you have information overload and I'm denying you by, you know, taking some AP where maybe I might have focused in the past and now I'm dropping scheme markers. So yeah, this is going to be really well paired with
will we see buffing. Arson come back? I mean, ranged scheme marker removal, to be able to help that out, you're going to need ways to get rid of them if it's a thing. And even if there's no one around, if you still get rid of that scheme marker, it's still off the board.
Let's go operatives.
There are also a couple named like Capellius that can scheme markers to friendlies.
Dude, I haven't heard his name in so long.
That's because you ain't been dead, IMO. But I think this GG is objective.
Poltergeist that just removes all markers in like a 4-inch pulse?
Yep, Poltergeist.
Yeah.
Something in Pandora?
Mm-hmm.
God. There you go, Pandora.
Yeah.
You got a thing.
Yeah, but unfortunately, most of our marker removal is just keyword locked. But, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, James, because I had forgotten about Capellius' action to be able to do that.
Everyone does. That's why it's good. But anyway.
I do think this one kind of strikes me as one where you might take it and just try and aim for that end point. Because it's really easy to try and set it up and then hope that your opponent doesn't put in nearly as much effort. But I am kind of like looking forward to see, you know, like a scheme marker, like dick measuring contest between two crews as they're just trying to throw out as many as they possibly can.
You know, talking about the scheme, something just came to mind. You know, all the Malifaux nerds out there squeeing when we got GG4, and now all the companies that make tokens, when they saw this, are all squeeing and like, all these Malifaux people are going to have to be buying extra scheme markers.
Actually, just a quick point about markers. I do have a bone to pick with Weird. Why'd you have to come up with a strategy that requires 7 strategy markers? I got my 6. They're all themed, and now I need an extra one.
Looks like you got some hobby time on your hands here soon.
I can't make that. It's like laser engraved. All right, I'll have to get a hold of the tabletop upgrades guy, and he'll get me another one.
So which one's up next? I lost track of which one we were on.
Take prisoner, Scott.
Yep, take prisoner.
Who wants to grab this one?
All right, take prisoner. We've had this one before. It's just at the end of your turn, if you have a friendly model engaging a chosen enemy, minion, or enforcer, and there are no other enemy models within 2 inches of line of sight of the chosen model, you get a point. I'm not really sure what the change is in this one, but I feel like they adjusted wording on like half of these. Otherwise, at the end of the game, if the chosen model is on your table half, or if the chosen model was killed by an enemy controlled model, gain one VP. So yeah, you're just picking an enemy minion or enforcer and running somebody up on them.
So yeah, interesting thing with this one is calling out enforcers. That's not usually a level of model that you see being called specifically out to be able to be chosen. You're usually seeing minions or masters or henchmen. So it's kind of nice, maybe the enforcer is getting a little bit of love in this. So maybe or maybe it's bad because now people will maybe take that if won't take that iffy enforcer because take prisoner could be taken on it. So but yeah.
Maybe. I think it's one of those cases where you're so used to it being like a minion or a henchman. I think henchmen get called out a lot in schemes. So having it so like enforcers are just, part of the fun is probably just a good thing in general for variety.
Yep, absolutely.
So the next one, Protected Territory, a lot of it's going to sound familiar, and that is it's similar to kind of a spread them out because of the range. But the first part, the reveal, at the end of the turn, you may remove two friendly scheme markers completely on the enemy table half, each at least 10 inches apart, and not within 3 inches of any enemy model. So that's the kind of a small difference. So it's two markers, not within three. It's kind of a hybrid from things we've seen before.
As opposed to being three markers.
Yeah, because we've also had some of the other ones where you had to have them near a terrain piece, not within three. So it's kind of a hybrid of things we've seen before, but I think it's a good one because now it's a little easier to deny if you see all those scheme markers around, sometimes even by accident, just by being near it. You don't have to spend your own interact actions to do things. The end point, at the end of the game, you remove two friendly scheme markers completely on the enemy table half, at least 10 inches apart, and within 3 inches of at least one friendly model. So it's still going to take two models of yours, still alive, with scheme markers on the opposing table half, 10 inches apart to get the second half. So again, it's like go wide, get use out of those models that are still on the board. And lots of interacting. If you can do free scheme marker dropping or any pushes to drop scheme markers, Weary Roads, Uncle Bog's gonna be great.
I can see like a clutch late game denial here where like somebody goes and they drop that last scheme and they're like, okay, I got my model within three, it's great, and then you get that push on them to shove them out of the three so they can't get that point.
It's a lot of effort to get some of these because even the first half, it's a couple of interacts and to be nowhere around anybody. And the second one, to have two models left that can just run off away from things on basically, other sides of the board or other quarters of the board and do scheme markers, might be a lot at the end of the game.
Hey, it's still better than Runic Binding.
Hey, don't bitch
Maybe.
Runic Binding. I scored that twice during that GG.
Okay, I think I've scored it once, so.
But yeah, it was a funny one. But okay, so the last one, which is the if you're trying to deny protected territory, you better hope they're not doing this one. So this is quite unique on the scoring timing, and I also like the way they worded it to avoid any shenanigans. So at the start of any enemy non-minion model, before it activates, and this you score this before they do any beginning of activation abilities or whatever the case may be. So if they activate and there are two friendly scheme markers within 3 inches in line of sight of them, you score this. So this is unique on the way on the timing it is scored. So that's why I'm saying that this and protected territory. You have to be careful on. So if you move a model to within 3 inches of a scheme marker because you think you're going to deny protected territory and they actually have ensnare, they can get another scheme marker near you, then you are going to help them score it. So what I like about this is since when they activate, you score it, and there's nothing that I can do about it if they activate that model. So let's say at the end of turn one, you drop your huckster, leaps in, drop two scheme markers near their big bad beater or master who's a beater. Now they have to think, are you bluffing this Or do they need to maybe not activate that big bad beater who wants to go in there and wreck face because they're going to give you a point, and then they need to maybe activate some other models that can get rid of these scheme markers before you can activate your Necma one and pummel them into submission. So I really think that this is going to be a good one to even bluff. So do they want to take the chance that, oh, that huckster that jumped in and put down two scheme markers next to you? Do you want to give up the point to kill that huckster, or are they just bluffing it? So I really, really enjoy this one here. And then the end is you choose an enemy model. You remove two friendly scheme markers that are within 3 inches in line of sight of them. So basically, just at the end point, you have to have two scheme markers within 3 inches of that enemy model to score it. It's not at the beginning of their activation. It doesn't have to be a non-minion, just having some markers down near a model. So relatively simple way to get the end point, but I'm really, really digging that ensnare on the way the timing and just how unique of a scheme it is.
Honestly, like, Ivan too loves these pools. Just the fact that he can just like point at somebody and drop scheme markers next to them is going to be so good for all of this. Because you never know what's happening. He's just dropping schemes all over the place.
Yep, and Ivan won. He turns shadow markers into scheme markers at the end of his activation. So, yep. Am I just doing it just because I get to do it, or do I have a reason?
Right.
So
all tricky like.
So now that we've gone through these, any first impressions? Obviously, I think it goes without saying that the interacting crews are going to be standing up and celebrating this. But other than the obvious, any first impressions, thoughts, comments?
Yeah. So the thought I have upon reading this is that three of the strategies require that are able to interact efficiently and at different places on the map. That's how you're going to be scoring strategies. So every waltz. But for scheme walls, to drop scheme markers, not being able to interact necessarily. And overall, there's a lot less G, which I'm definitely very excited for.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think the requirement to actually engage with the side of the game that is interacting and putting such an emphasis on spending action points on something that isn't just punching people in the face is a welcomed breath of fresh air in my mind.
So my thing is, I'm going to be interested in seeing. I think in GG we saw a preponderance of very elite crews, you know, your 7 model crews, your 8 model crews. Are we now going to see a maybe not preponderance, but definitely an increase in, let's say, 10 model crews, 11 model crews, to just have that AP glut of being able to drop markers, because every model other than insignificant models can take the interact action. So I think that's going to be something that will be very interesting to watch. Just, I kind of said it earlier, that fly with me, ride with me, the models that can drop two ski markers or take two interact actions when they have to be in a specific spot and they're not there already is going to be super huge. You know, Nexus 2, maybe they make a comeback. Who knows? I don't know. I think botanists are going to be huge for explorers. I think you're going to see, you know, those minions that can do these things, you're going to see 3 of them. So like with Slurids, you know, well, I usually would see 1 or 2 as Zerata or whatever the case. I think you will not be surprised to see 3 of them. I made kind of a fun little list that I was posting on some Discords and on our Messenger group. Nekoma 2, 4 Corrupted Hounds, 4 Young Neph, and a Black Blood Shaman. Seems like there's a lot of AP to do some interacts there. Every one of those can drop two ski markers during their activation. So it's going to be very interesting to see if this will be the death knell for the most part of those very elite crews.
So Scott, you had mentioned some stats that you kind of threw together earlier today. Would you mind sharing some of those with us?
Sure. Just make sure we no one else has any kind of comments before I go into this.
Go for it.
Okay. I had some extra time at my hands when I was spending some time at the vet's office. So I went through the GGs 1, 2, 3, and 4, and kind of went down and broke things down by what I think there are the three categories for schemes and strategies. So interacting ones, standing in a place, and kill and or damaging models. And then obviously there's some that can be in more than one category. Because so like say for in GG4 you have dig the graves. That's a killing and an interacting. So some of these numbers you'll see that the math doesn't work out to exactly 17 things. So kind of give an overall look on these. So in the previous three GGs before this, there was 8 interacting strategies, and in this one we have 11, so kind of went up by 3. In the standing in place, or like things like where you have to stand next to a model, that's not kind of standing in a place, but they didn't really have any other categories for that, so I kind of included it in that. So we were kind of those are kind of even. So we had GG1 had 7, GG2 and 4 had or GG2 had 6, GG3 had 5, and GG4 has 7. And then the killing and damaging ones, it was the first three we had were 6, and in this one we have 3. So definitely those killing and damaging schemes and strategies went down. Now, obviously, people can take different interpretations of this. So, like, no guard to stash in G3 was a standing around one, but it was also, very much about killing. So, you can take a little bit different interpretations for that. And the other thing I did was just to see how interact heavy the GGs were. I went through and counted if how many the minimum number of interacts you would have to take for each G to score all the points for the 4 strategies and 13 teams. So that was kind of interesting. So for GG1, you would have to take 31 interacts for all the strategies. And GG2, you had to take 26. GG3, you had to take 28. And then GG4. And this also counts that your opponent is not doing anything to counteract what you're doing. So, like on stuffing the ballot box, I did a minimum number you need to score all the points without your opponent doing anything. So, obviously, these numbers go up as your opponent does things. So, that this one came out to 50 interacts you need to do to score all the points for the strategies and schemes. So,
That's pushing double the nearest GG.
yeah. So that kind of gives you not only just as more interacting, but a lot of them you're looking at 4 to 5 interacts to score all your points, and then stuffing the ballot. God, who knows how many that's going to be to not only just score your points, but also to deny.
All of them.
I think that's one of the things when I was breaking this down, what my previous comment on seeing more maybe 10 and 11 model crews other than things that. You're like Lord Cooper, you get 3 runaways. Yeah, you're starting 4 models with your master and totem. Although, grant, obviously, your totems can't interact, but those kind of could be your outliers in GG4 on having a number of models where you're actually hiring, 8, 9, 10 models other outside of your totem and your master, which also touches on too is totems that are significant. So, like my funny list I told you about before, my totem is insignificant. So in some ways that kind of puts you behind the curve and being able to do all these interacts going forward on this GG4.
Orville loves this GG. He's the freaking man here.
Oh yeah, there's so and then because like I said, I had a lot of time on my hands. I went through and I'm just going to kind of touch on this on ones. I went through every faction and master and titles and kind of rated where I thought if they got better, if they got worse with this GG4, and then kind of broke it down into the factions I thought got better or worse. Now, some of these are affected on how I rated them because I really don't know the masters and or titles because I haven't seen them. Like Teary, I've yet to play a game against either Teary, so I really didn't rate her up or down. But according to my very impartial and not subjective rating system at all. The two factions I thought that benefited the most, that their masters, and I also counted versatiles in this because like the Arcanist Versatiles, love this. That starter box is tailor-made for this G4. That the Bayou and Arcanist faction rated the most improvement. And I thought the ones that either went down or improved the least were Neverborn and Rezzers. And that is as a faction as a whole, not like specific map.
Sure, sure. I am curious to see which masters rise up this time around that may not have been represented very well previously, or finding new avenues of play from parts of their kit that was underrepresented previously.
Obviously, I think you could just kind of look at what we didn't see in GG3, so like, or saw very little of, like your Nellies, your Colettes. Those two come to mind huge on that are just going to be loving this GG4. I think Zip is going to love this. I think that was one I rated highly. And I could be wrong on this, but I think Nexus, both versions, but I think version 1 is going to love this one because they just have a glut of, or possibly have a glut of just AP to just, you know, just do a lot of things on the board. So those are the ones that just come to my mind. Like you said, Shtuk 2, I think with his, he will really love this one.
Yeah, I think his scheme markers gain new value with this pool. I mean, he was already great to begin with, but I think there's this extra value now in those. And now you're much more likely to use his abilities to, like, move, not just move somebody and, like, have them focus, but now you can, like, you can move your models and have them interact to stuff ballots or what have you. I mean, there's some cases where, like, I can't, you know, like, throw them up and have them interact to do something for other schemes, but I think there's a lot of play here for some jank.
Yeah. Well, and then also too, any keyword and or versatile you can bring that have just mass marker removal. You know, someone throws down, you know, Huxer's throwing down 6 scheme markers on your side of the board in a smallish area for information overload, and then, you know, the poltergeist just comes over there and goes poof, no more. The Bayou, another reason I put Bayou so good was the upgrade they like to give out has marked territory. Well, marked territory, poof, scheme marker's gone. So, you know, that's going to be another thing to look out for is what is going to have lots of mass scheme marker removal. At first, I was thinking, oh, any model would blow it to hell, but blow it to hell, that's destructible. They don't just, so,
right.
You know, Sidir and didn't just get any that much better. But I've been rambling on here. So thoughts from you guys, what like factions and masters do you guys think have gotten better?
Well, I can go ahead and just end this conversation right now. Fit the most from this GG is Lucius Wong.
I don't know
that you could draw.
You did that disappointing, James. Thank you.
There is not a pool you could make that would be bad for Lucius Wong or Lucius 2 for that matter. All of these things add up to interacts being very important, timing interact models that can move around very quickly and sneakily, like changelings, is going to be really good. I'm very, very excited to play Lucius, and I do not think he'll need matures to keep up this GG.
Honestly, I'm looking forward to playing against that. Well, I'm just curious to just feel out some of these things. But to answer your question, Scott, for me personally, this has me looking in 3 places specifically. It's got me looking at Ivan 2. It's got me looking at Nexus. And it's got me looking at Molly 2, surprisingly, just because she's got the whole move interact deal. Ivan can just point at people and drop scheme markers. And Nexus, like you mentioned previously, just has like the numbers game going on. So I'm hoping that this is a GG where finesse matters a little bit more, where you can get away with not always just bringing the biggest beat stick possible, and you can actually go out there and play more janky stuff and see some success.
I think the low Soulstone significant models are going to be, you're going to be getting points And I'm pretty sure every faction's around.
And Slave Spirit's stocks just went up.
As if they weren't already high. It's got just got even better.
Right. Absolutely.
But a couple other masters I was thinking about that you haven't seen a whole lot of that I think just got so much better is Anya 2 and Tony 2 with those drudges that you can't get rid of their scheme markers. I think those are going to be another two masters that we're going to see a lot of. And then be interesting to see the new models that will come out in the book if any of those or all of those will be GG4 favorites coming right out of the gate.
One thing I think is going to be neat, though, is playing playing Castor 1 and just the bonus action of moving your totem and having it drop scheme markers. Like, you just have like a bluff machine built into your crew, basically, where you're like, yeah, I'm just going to be dropping scheme markers all over the place, and you tell me which ones are going to score the points.
Well, and also, too, with Marathine, he has a tactical action to remove a scheme marker. So maybe it just won't be a focus charge or walk charge, you know, anymore. Maybe it'll be a remove a scheme marker, then charge. But yeah.
Yeah, it'll be nice to actually see that action, like, get value.
Well, and then also, too, is something that you don't see or don't hear a lot of people talk about Castor 1 is he's got an, I believe off the top of my head, an 8-inch aura that at during the end phase, I believe it's limited to one model within that 8-inch aura can take two irreducible to take the interact action. So, you know, that seems pretty good, especially if you need to get that last scheme marker down for ensnare.
Yeah, you're talking final preparations, and yeah, that's one of them things that's pretty great. I mean, heck, you could have that to get yourself that last ballot or to get that last ballot to just like tick it back over and deny somebody. Yep. Like there's a lot of value that I could see coming out of that potentially that previously it wasn't really used all that much.
I don't think I've ever used it. I've used the I can't remember off the top of my head, the 5 Soulstone minion that he's free action. He can take 2 reducible to take an interact action. The Blood Vessel. I've used that a few times. Yep. In fact, Tuesday night I played a game of Castor and I used that in the trick or treat strategy. But I don't think I've ever used his aura. So again, that is something that he could do. And though I think a lot of people would be looking at those abilities and actions that maybe were not used at all or used sparingly, and now that those are going to rise to the top, whereas now that, 3, 4, 5 beat stick that you always brought, maybe that won't be such an appealing option or as appealing option. Well, because a 3, 4, 5 beat stick is never something you want to shy away from. But
I'm actually looking at Blood Vessels now, which is something I could not say previously.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're 10-inch place. They can do, they'll be able to do 2 interacts. You know, one with it, 1 AP, and obviously they got to take some damage, but they can then take another one. So, it's going to be very interesting. The pendulum swung very far. We went to a very beady GG3, and I don't think quite, I know, remembering off the top of my head, off my old man brain, I don't think a lot of people anticipated how beady this was going to be. And now we've swung all the way over to, at least at first glance, is a very interact heavy GG. So, obviously that will bear fruits either way on whether none of us know what we're talking about or, we're going to nail it right on the head on how this is going to come. But I've said in the past, I think GGs are more impactful to the game overall than some releases. Obviously, when they brought out all the titles and then all the new masters, four, that's more impactful to a GG, especially for weird, because GG4s or any GG don't make them any money, but the book releases with people buying models do make the money. Although I guess in a offhanded way they do make the money, because now people may go out and buy models that will score them points for this GG that they didn't have previously. But I just think it's in some instances just way more impactful than some of the book releases. So maybe some people disagree with that, but I'll die in the
head. I mean, I'd take it a step further. I'd say that the Gaining Grounds updates are the most impactful thing that they put out for the game, period. I'd say more so than new models, and more so than even your average errata. Yep. I think Burns like really shook the game up, you know, and when they added in all the titles and everything. But like the GG is quite literally the game, you know. When there's a new GG that comes out, it's quite literally a new game that we're playing.
Basically. It defines how the points are scored, and you someone may have said it one time, but points are prizes. So, you know, that's kind of important.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's effectively a form of an errata in a sense that, like, it doesn't actually change individual models, but it changes their value under the context of what the game is. And so I think GGs are very important, and I think people really enjoy when we get a new one. It really kind of just reinvigorates the entire community.
Yeah, I mean, I know I was getting a little tired of the GG3, and it had worn out its welcome. I mean, it'd been around for more than a year because it came out in July-ish last year. I think it came out like 2 to 4 weeks before Gen Con. So, you know, this one's been around for, 15 months-ish or so.
Yeah, I think the second it goes beyond a year, it really starts getting tiresome.
Yeah. And this I think will put some excitement into maybe people who may have taken some time off from the game because, you know, the GG3 had been getting worn down and stuff like that. So I know, you know, this is great for us because this gives us lots of content for the drive to and from work to listen to all the people who do podcasts and YouTube videos and everything on that. So I know a lot of people get excited about it.
That's super fun.
Yeah. You guys have anything else? Want to bring up anything? One thing. So I just came to my mind. I have it written down here in my notes, and I almost slipped it by. So the one scheme that you think will be seen the least of. So you guys probably haven't put any thought into it, so I'll go first. So I think Protected Territory will be the scheme that will be used the least. Just for the fact that being 10 inches apart and not having enemy models near it for the reveal, and with what I think is a fairly reasonable prediction that we're going to be seeing more models on the table. So getting them away from the enemy and being 10 inches apart, I think that is going to be troublesome. So I think that's the one we will see the least.
So I kind of alluded to this earlier, but I think Sweating Bullets is going to be the one that is taken the least. At least so far, reading them over, it's the one I want to bring the least. And it's just because I think it has the most caveats to try and achieve its requirements. So I think compared to some of the other ones, I think it's a little more difficult to pull off than some of the other ones.
And I guess I would pick Ensnare, because being able to have two friendly ski markers within 3 inches of a specific model, usually Ensnare also has to be set up at the right timing as well. So it seems like it could be tricky, but we'll see.
I think everybody's going to be bringing tech. I think that's just going to be kind of like scheme marker tech is going to be a default this time around.
If you want to get scheme points, I mean, you got to be able to drop them.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. So the other thing I wanted to bring up, I almost forgot some of my notes here. I was furiously scribbling all day long. So we kind of touched on what masters we thought had gotten better with this. So what master, whether it's in a faction you play or not, what master do you think took the biggest hit to this Gaining Grounds? And it could be both titles of that one or just one. I won't limit it. So I think that Levy took the biggest hit in G.
So he doesn't have much along the lines of just scheme marker attack, does he?
No, he has Von Stuck's little jumpy boys, but it's harder for him to get that suit because he doesn't have the card draw that Stuck does. So he does have a little bit of it, but I mean, and obviously this is going in keyword. You know, obviously you can bring tech outside of something, whether it's versatiles or out of keyword stuff. But just staying in keyword, I think Levy One took the biggest hit in this GG.
Well, I've given this zero thought.
So that's good. It'd be a hot take.
hot take. James, you go first.
The importance of the interact action and scheme marker. What excites me is possibilities for it, because every crew in the game has these generic actions. For a lot of pools, it's going to be a lot more open with people that can drop a bunch of scheme markers will be good, but I think having a clever is exciting, even if it's a non-answer.
Yeah, you didn't answer the question at all. I'm going to say Lady Justice.
Both versions or any particular one? Okay.
Both versions, sure. I mean, of course she's a leapy master, but like spending her AP on scheming has never been really what she wants to be doing with it. And I think a lot of her title is enabling the punchin' berry. So, without having more time to actually sit here and contemplate it, that is going to be my guess for now.
I mean, I can see that, you know, Lady Justice, especially one, you know, yeah, she wants to punch and she doesn't have a lot of tech in her keyword. Although with the tall stuff, Rocketeers and Loaiza always be good to bring out a keyword, but in her keyword, she doesn't have really that a lot of tech and a lot of speed to be getting around and doing a lot of interacts.
Exactly.
So I'm just glad to see that this GG made Lucius great again. I'm sure James is all excited about that.
I don't know if he was ever great, and I'm not going to sit here and claim that he is great now. He's still got problems in my opinion. And I mean you can tailor make a GG for him. I don't know if that actually makes up for all the problems.
In Lucius's mind, he was great.
Well, yeah. Lucius has his own opinions, but we're trying to talk about reality here.
When we're talking about a game of plastic miniatures, okay,
Yes.
I
There's nothing more real.
my pocketbook says it's very real.
Yes, exactly. So, James, you're gonna have to come out there and prove us all wrong, or at least prove me wrong.
Widgets and markers from Tabletop, great work.
Yeah,
I
he's a
got a
great dude.
special purple, mix mine up with Zach, so that is awesome. But yeah, I think I'm really excited for GG4. The only other thing I have to say is that I think it invigorates old rules, so I think it's great for the game, and I can't wait to try it out and lose a lot of games.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, it kind of does level the playing field a bit for the less experienced players versus the grizzled veterans.
Yeah, I'm ready to go out there and be bad at it.
And that's fun.
I'm ready to go and do things wrong because I only read half the rules.
Right. Yeah. Like we came in here all haphazard, like.
Yeah. And also, does anyone else have anything? I just have one more thing, but I'll kind of use that as a wrap up.
Go
Okay.
ahead.
Just want to, you know, thank the developers and the playtesters. I mean, they kind of take it on the chin, you know, when things don't come out exactly the way everyone's expecting, and then some balance issues arise from that. But just, you know, thank all of them for their hard work, especially the playtesters who don't get paid for it and they're just volunteering their time. So just appreciate the work that goes into that.
Yeah, I think the game is arguably in one of its best states it's been in since third
Yeah.
edition.
And now, you know, 6 months down the road, you know, we'll just all start bitching and moaning about the GG. But right now, everyone's very happy.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll end up eating crow about something eventually, but for now, my outlook is very
Oh, yeah.
positive.
That's always positive when the new one comes out.
To end on. So thanks, everybody, for listening. See you next time.
Well, have everyone have a good one.